welcome to Book Solid. I'm your host, Soraya, and I am joined by special guest, author of The Cheerleaders, Little Monsters, and That Weekend, just to name a few, Kara Thomas. Kara's latest novel, That Weekend, was a Barnes & Noble YA Book Club Pick of the Month and was named one of the best YA books of 2021 by BuzzFeed Books. It's out in paperback today, and if you have yet to pick it up, consider this your sign. I was a huge fan of it, as well as The Cheerleaders. You can peep my review of both on our Instagram. But I'm really excited to have Kara here today. We're going to be chatting about thrillers and true crime, the inspiration behind her novels, and her upcoming book, The New Friends, which is coming spring 2023. So, Kara, thank you so much for being here today.
Thank you for having me.
And so before we get started, I guess to kick us off, if you want to tell our listeners a little bit about That Weekend.
Sure. So That Weekend is about three friends who skip their prom weekend, and instead they take a secret trip up to the Catskills to one of the girls' grandmother's lake house. And the book follows our main character, Claire, who wakes up at the end of the weekend alone on a hiking trail with no memory of the last 48 hours, and her two best friends are missing.
And it was kind of perfect timing. So when this book was coming out, I was on like a book buying ban, which never really works, but I was trying. And I watched a Crowdcast event with you and Erin A. Craig, who we also love around these parts. And I was fortunate enough to interview her last year. And by the end of it, I was like, okay, I have to go get this book. So I drove to Barnes & Noble and bought it and read it in like a day or two. And then the day after I finished is when I got an email saying you were available for interviews. I was like, oh my God, it's meant to be. Yeah, it was incredible. If y'all can't tell by the way I devoured it, So I love how fleshed out the characters are, and I want to talk to you about that a little bit later, because I felt similarly when I read The Cheerleaders, that I feel often in YA books, or even just thrillers in general, characters are sacrificed for plot, and you don't really have like deep fleshed out characters, and so I really enjoyed that aspect of it. But before we move on to that, I want to ask about That Weekend a little bit. So there are kind of two huge spoilers in that book. And I'm just curious, like, how/when did you decide to take the plot in that direction? Or how did you even think of it in the first place?
So I'll try to be as vague as possible. This isn't like necessarily a huge spoiler, but I mean, it's we'll call it like spoiler light. Without like revealing anything specific about the book. But the big twist that kind of like answers the central mystery to the book, it came to me, I think around, I'm forgetting the year, when I basically wrote That Weekend in a haze. I had written a draft when I was like 9 months pregnant, and then I had my son and I got the first edit letter, and my editor was kind of like, okay, well, you need to like rewrite this entire book. And I was like, okay. And we started like thinking about the twists some more. And the major twist came to me, I guess it was around the time that the Golden State Killer was identified through forensic genealogy, through DNA testing. I guess they identified him through like a grandchild of his that was in the system. And they solved this case that was like decades and decades old that nobody thought would ever be solved. And it was kind of like a needle in a haystack, this DNA. So it got the messed up gears in my brain turning just about the way of like, you never know what horrible secrets are lurking in your family. And especially when it comes to these things like DNA tests, it got me thinking about all of the ways that like you think you're doing this very like simple thing by like looking into your family's history and like what kind of horrors could be there. And like no big spoilers, obviously it's not that somebody was like related to a serial killer, in That Weekend, but it is this like devastating revelation that completely destroys these characters' lives.
Yeah. And I liked it because it felt like, I mean, we have this one really persistent question throughout the novel, and it felt like you had the climax and you came down and then there was like another climax that you weren't expecting, which for me, I was having like an issue with the thriller genre at that time a bit, just because I was feeling like a lot of what I was reading felt really formulaic and nothing was really surprising me anymore. And needless to say that this got me out of that rut. Is there like a specific, I guess, and with writing thrillers in general, like how do you go about plotting it out? Because I feel like it, I don't know, some genres, I feel like it's really easy to do linearly, but maybe not so much with thrillers. Or is that how you do it?
So I never plot things linearly. It's kind of like building a Jenga tower, constructing a mystery. For me, it's where I want to end up. Sometimes I know the, if not like the specific ending, I know the resolution or the answer to the mystery before I even know who the characters are. And sometimes it makes it challenging to write a mystery because, I mean, like it's like you mentioned, the reason that people keep turning a page is because they're invested in the characters. Like you can desperately want to know like who killed somebody or like what happened to the missing person, but you're not going to keep turning the pages if you're just not invested in the characters or care about what happens to them. So it's a balancing act. So I usually start with knowing that answer. And then I kind of have to build around it, like who are the characters, what's going on in their lives that led to this point that like this crime occurred. And then from there, once I have like the foundation, then it becomes about like the individual pieces that make the story make sense. The twists and turns that the story takes always comes last for me. Like I may like have some ideas in my head about like either like a red herring or like a different like path the main character goes down, like a turning point, like what's going to be the turning point in the book that kind of like flips everything on its head. I might know that at the beginning, but I don't have like the specifics of what I think the twists and turns are going to be. That always has to come later. And that's difficult because it's like, I use the Jenga tower metaphor, because if you have like a piece that is like not structurally sound and like you take that, like, okay, this twist doesn't really like fit, I have to take this out, it can make the whole thing collapse because mysteries do have to be very intricately plotted. And that's why like a lot of people like use the term thriller and mystery interchangeably. But I think like a book can be both. A book can be a mystery and a thriller. I think to some extent, like most of my books are, they have elements of both mysteries and thrillers. But for me, the difference between a mystery and thriller is that sometimes thrillers don't have that like intricate plotting and like all of the pieces that you have to put together. The thriller could just be like something like, I don't know, like the movie Speed, where it's like they're on a bus and there's a bomb. Like what's going to happen? It's not necessarily about all of the layers and like the investigation and all the pieces of that mystery. So that's my very long-winded way of saying that it's never linear. It's almost like I just have all these pieces to a jigsaw puzzle and like I shake up the bag of the pieces of the jigsaw puzzle and just throw them out and like, oh no, some of the pieces are missing or the cat ate them and it's trying to like put a puzzle together from there. So it can be a very frustrating process.
And I've always wondered too, in the editing process for like books with a mystery component, is it, I feel like you have to have a much sharper eye in the sense that everything has to make sense, or you don't want to leave any loose thread where someone's like, hey, that actually doesn't make sense. So do you find that to be true? Like, is it, you kind of have to go through with a fine tooth comb in the editing process?
Yes, definitely. I have mentioned before how like I almost always need to rewrite my books, and it's not necessarily because like, oh my God, this book sucks, rewrite it. It's more of like, okay, you have all these pieces of the mystery, but my editor has found a bunch of pieces that are just like not connecting all the way. And it's sometimes fixing it causes more, it's kind of like, I don't know, knitting. And like, if you go wrong somewhere and you have a snag and you have to unravel it, like the whole thing falls mm-hmm. apart. So yeah, that's definitely, I think that's a problem in most books that are tightly plotted, but especially with mysteries, if you have like one piece that's snagging it and like somebody finds that piece, it's not always just like a simple fix. It's uh-oh, like the whole foundation is crumbling now and we kind of have to like go back to the drawing board and interrogate if everything else that happened in the book makes sense.
And so do you have like a part of your writing or editing process that like you really enjoy, or like conversely something that you just absolutely can't stand?
I absolutely hate getting that first edit letter when I have just like poured so much into a draft and then you get to hear everything that's wrong with it. That's a really frustrating part, but it's also leads into a part that I do like. I do like troubleshooting mysteries sometimes, like trying to think of like creative solutions to problems and like filling in plot holes. That can be really rewarding because when you get it right and it clicks, you're like, oh my God, I'm a genius. That part can be a double-edged sword. I do really like the stage right now with a project where like I have 50 pages of it, but I'm also like slowly doing research as I'm writing it because it involves like a topic that I'm not familiar with. Spoiler alert, it's football. I don't know anything about football, and I don't know why when I sat down to write this book I thought I could like wing it when this high school football team factors in so prominently. But I do really enjoy research. I think it's it kind of like activates that librarian part of my brain. And I just like finding out new and interesting things. And it's cool being able to apply some of that to my writing.
What's the most interesting thing that you've come across in researching your books so far?
Okay, so I don't know if I call it interesting, more like disturbing, as long as we're on like the theme of true crime and investigations. But so I spend a lot of time researching things like the database of like missing persons and unidentified bodies. And a while ago, I just like, I don't even think it was for a particular book. It was just, I was like researching this for fun, which is, I don't know, probably says a lot about like my potential personality disorders, but the unidentified body parts database. And something I learned is that there are, it's on the West Coast somewhere. I don't know if it's like off the coast of Canada or maybe Washington or Oregon, but these feet have just been washing up on this beach somewhere.
Just like multiple pairs of feet?
Yeah, like multiple pairs of feet. And like not even really like pairs. It'll be like a foot and then like maybe the matching foot will show up years later or something. And like the most logical explanation is that like very sadly, like people were dying by suicide by a nearby bridge and like the impact of like hitting the water, their feet are washing up. But it is just very, very disturbing to think about like all of these just feet washing up on a beach. So I would have to say that that is like the most off the wall thing I've encountered in my research. I would not bring it up at a party where you're meeting people for the first time and it comes up in small talk. Like, well, what do you do for a living? It's like, well, I spend a lot of time.
Funny you should ask.
Funny you should ask. I can tell you all about the unidentified body parts.
So I mentioned this a little bit at the top of the episode, and I wanted to dive a little bit deeper because I noticed this with Claire in That Weekend and with Monica and Jen in The Cheerleaders, but it's the depth of your characters. And like I said before, I really wasn't expecting it. And I feel like it complemented the story very well. I feel like I was actually more invested in the characters themselves as opposed to kind of the mystery of the cheerleaders. And like, I wanted to know what happened, but it wasn't the end all be all for me. And so how do you go about creating your characters? How do you go about humanizing them?
First of all, thank you so much, because that's really important to me when reading. I do think that you're absolutely right that with thrillers, character is sacrificed for plot. And that's usually because like people, like some authors will just completely destroy their entire character by having them like make a crazy decision, or just by having the, oh, she's a secret psychopath. And I don't really feel like those like twists and tropes work. The reason that I connect with mysteries and thrillers is that like what I said earlier, you have to care about what happens to this character at the end of the book. Like, who cares if they survive if you don't, like, you're not invested in them. I think that what is probably, like, coming through and in my books is just the sign of, like, a really sharp-eyed editor who, I mean, I mentioned that we have gone through multiple drafts of books, not so much with cheerleaders. Cheerleaders, I think Monica is probably, like, the character that I felt her the most when I was writing, and that's odd because she is just, like, so different for me in every way. Like, I was not on Dan's team. I was not popular. She could not be more different from me, but I felt her pain, I guess. Like, I knew who she was from the beginning, and that almost, like, everything she did was going to be filtered through, like, this horrible loss that she had gone through with her sister. I feel that, like, when I really, like, feel a character while I'm writing, it's usually the ones that come through at the most and that people always bring up as, like, some of their favorite characters. And with Claire, I think it's funny because Claire is probably the character that on the surface is most like me. We're both, like, only children. She has, like, issues with anxiety and, like, inferiority complexes with her friends and stuff. And all of those things kind of, like, emerged between drafts. I think, like, the reason, so that weekend probably went through, like, 5 or 6 different drafts. And as crazy as that sounds, it wasn't just, like, the plotting and the twists and turns and making sure everything held up. But one of the things that my editor said, we were probably, like, on the third draft, and she was just like, I don't understand who Claire is and, like, why she thinks the way she does and, like, what is really motivating her, because a lot of the things that play out, it really is Kat and Jesse's story. And Claire was just kind of getting lost. So I think just between drafts and having, like, an editor, like, point out to you the places where your main character is not, like, thinking like a fully fleshed out person would think and the decisions that they're making. One of the things that really, like, helped the story click for me and understand, like, who Claire was the way that she dealt with the memory loss and the post-traumatic amnesia. And that actually wasn't an element in the story until really late in the process. I want to say, like, probably the third draft, we just sat down and we're like, there needs to be some sort of, like, shift in how this story is told, because it seems like Claire is just, like, relaying to the reader how everything happened, and we're like, we're getting her perspective, and it's like, are we supposed to trust her? Like, everybody, like, suspects her of being involved in her friend's disappearance, but we have her perspective, so we know how things happened. And that's how we settled on, like, well, maybe Claire doesn't know what happened, and we're uncovering all this information with her, because mm-hmm. when she was injured on this mountain, she lost her memory of the last 48 hours. So I think that let me dig into Claire's psyche a little bit more of, like, it's completely terrifying to think that, like, you have, like, a missing 48 hours where you could have done or said anything. It's like getting blackout drunk, but it lasts an entire weekend. So that's kind of, like, how those two characters came about for me.
And kind of in that same vein, the topics explored in both novels, like certain aspects of mental health or trauma, I mean, I feel like we're kind of moving to a point where these things are being discussed and incorporated into books and shows a lot more. But it didn't used to happen very often, especially in YA. I feel like it was sometimes something that could be, like, shied away from. So was that your intention with these novels, is, like, highlighting that or having it be kind of at the forefront of what these characters are going through?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, one of my biggest pet peeves when I'm, like, reading mysteries and thrillers is it just, like, feels weird when the character is not, like, affected mentally or emotionally by, like, somebody in their orbit, like, getting murdered. I mean, I feel like for the types of books I'm writing, it doesn't make sense not to address the mental health aspects of it. Especially, like, something in that weekend, Claire talks about, I think she says, like, did that weekend like change her and make her this anxious and depressed person, or did this like monumental event in her life that left her with PTSD just like bring out something in her that was already there? And that's like something I've like kind of grappled in with my own life. Well, does the distress of your life like make you an anxious or depressed person, or is it just like we are who we are, and like we have these things that we're dealing with, and sometimes all it takes is like one thing to kind of like push you over and trigger these mental health issues. So I'm really interested in that, especially with how it like relates to crime and how crime affects people psychologically.
Yeah, and I think especially, I mean, the things that are happening to these characters would be traumatic at any age, but we're talking about, you know, 16, 17, 18 year olds. Like, you're right, it doesn't really make sense when you see a character go through something like this and then be completely unaffected when it's like, you know, your most crucial developmental years, and then you go through this huge tragedy. Inevitably, that is going to take a toll on a person. And I think it just makes the characters all that much more relatable. And people can find, I mean, hopefully, you know, not everyone who's reading this has gone through something like that, but I think you can find pieces of what you've been through in your life in these characters. So I know we've kind of touched on your writing process and how you kind of mold these stories, but does your inspiration come from?
It's kind of a mix. Like, I've had some ideas just like come to me fully formed. Like the Cheerleaders was one of those books where I had read something about a real case about a town that was plagued by like these deaths of cheerleaders, and my brain kind of just like went haywire with like all the what ifs. And I thought of like this character, Monica, and everything kind of just like fell into place. And then other things are kind of just seeds that take a little bit more nurturing. Like that weekend was that type of book where I started out with like the seed of the idea of just a camping trip gone wrong, or like a hiking trip gone wrong, probably because I had read about I get a lot of my ideas from like real world cases that like, sometimes I'll just read about like an unsolved murder or missing person case that just like really gets under my skin. Like there's like one aspect of it that really is just like so unsettling. But that weekend, it wasn't really like one case in particular, but I remember this case that has bugged me for years about these two girls that went hiking in Panama on a trip, and they never returned from their hike, and their remains were found, I think, like years later. And it's likely that they just like died from getting lost. But the thing that like really is probably just like so devastating for their family and for so many other people is that like we will never know what happened, because they were just completely alone out there. And there's just all these little clues that don't add up. Like their cameras were found, and they were just like taking photos of strange things like trees. And like the most logical explanation is that they were lost and they were using like the flash on their camera to be able to see at night. But it's just those like little details that like get under your skin. And sometimes that'll spark like an entire idea for a book for me.
Where would you say your true crime fascination comes from? Are you like a lifelong crime junkie or?
Yeah. So for a very strange reason, it's probably not that strange. It's probably like a reason that a lot of people are drawn to these types of things. I was a very anxious, fearful child, and I don't know why, but I had it probably because my parents let me watch Law and Order when I was like 6 years old. I had a very like deep rooted fear that I was going to be murdered as a kid. And like, I would tell my dad, I'm like, am I going to get murdered? Is like somebody going to break into our house and murder us? And he'd be like, don't be ridiculous. You have more of a chance of being murdered by someone, you know, it's like as if that was comforting my health. So yeah. So very young age, like that's kind of where I was at mentally, always just like really afraid of like crime and something bad happening. So I think that it just comes from a sense of fear, and that you feel like you have more control over the thing, the more you know about a topic. Tangentially related, like one of my biggest fears is flying on an airplane. So of course, like I do extensive research into like every commercial airliner disaster from the last 50 years. And it's kind of like perverse and sick, like watching all these documentaries and stuff, but it almost helps with the fear of the thing to know like every single thing about it. So I think that's where it didn't really start as like an appreciation for true crime, I guess, because what that manifested into was like a love for detective novels and like crime TV shows and stuff. And I kind of like had this idea in my head, like, oh, I want to be an FBI agent. But I, that dream was killed because you actually have to do 100 pull-ups in the physical fitness test, and I can't even do one.
I've never been able to do a pull-up, ever. I don't get how people do it.
Well, I hope you don't have any dreams of being an FBI agent, because apparently it's qualifying. I think that's bullshit, but I mean, I guess you have to be physically fit to go after murderers. But so it kind of started for me just as an appreciation for like mysteries and the unknown. And I think, like, I'm trying to puzzle out like why it's just like exploded in the past few years. Like, I mean, it's like, why do people get obsessed with anything? It's just, it's, you can't really explain it, but I feel like with true crime, it's sort of that aspect of like, if you watch all this stuff, it's like you feel like you've kind of become an expert on it, and like you can discuss it with your friends and like argue about it. Like, oh, is this person, did they do it or not? Did they, mm-hmm. are they guilty or not? It's almost like if you meet somebody and you start talking about like your mutual appreciation for this like true crime documentary, you can like get into a debate about like your theories and stuff. It's almost like the new sports where like everybody like has their like favorite one, and you talk about it, and I think people are just invested in a lot of these because they are like active ongoing cases in a lot of the scenarios. So it's just like another thing for people to kind of just like try to follow along with and puzzle out.
Yeah, I can definitely, especially with like when Serial came out, I remember everyone was like, oh my god, did you listen to Serial, what do you mm-hmm. think? And so I am curious if there's like a particular, I mean, I know you just mentioned the case of the two women in Panama, but if there's like a particular story or something that you've read that's just like really to this day stuck with you, that you're like, how and why?
So this is like not an obscure one at all. And I mean, it's ongoing, and it's one that like everybody has heard about. And I mean, I describe it as like true crime and not just unsolved mystery, but the case of the missing Malaysian airliner. I completely went down that rabbit hole recently, mm-hmm. and it just like, I feel like the only scenario that makes sense is that pilot kills everybody on board. A lot of like the experts agree that like that was a very deliberate act, and it's just, it's so terrifying. And even more terrifying than that is the idea that like, we may never know what happened. Like the answers are gone. The pilot's dead. Everybody on that plane is dead. They aren't not going to find the black box at this point. Like, all we know is that the plane crashed. So that is kind of like a big one for me that is on my mind all the time, because kind of just like on a very basic level, like how does an entire airplane disappear? It really kind of like puts into perspective like how big the world is and how like insignificant we are as human beings, and how small that like somebody can crash and hide a commercial jetliner. So yes, that is kind of like my case that has been bugging me recently, and that I like have Google alerts set up for updates.
To me, in the concept of missing anything, like I feel like of like, I guess, true crime content, it's missing persons cases that I'm always, because I just don't understand. I don't understand how a person can go missing and there are no answers several years later. So I know there might not be very much that you could tell me at this point, but is there anything you can say about your next novel, The New Friends?
Yes. So, okay. So The New Friends, interestingly enough, it's not going to be my next YA. So The New Friends, what I can say about it for now is that it's my first speculative book. It's not science fiction or fantasy or whatever. What I mean by speculative is that there is like that added element of like the unknown. So keeping it very vague. But so while I was working on a draft of The New Friends, which was supposed to be my next YA, I've never written a speculative book before, so I just kept bumping into a lot of like world building stuff. And I realized that like this idea was kind of like beyond my scope, and I needed to like set it aside for a bit and work on something else. And I thought I would work on an adult book. And I wound up finishing that adult book, and that will actually be out next year. I have to be vague about that too, because it hasn't been announced yet. But so my next book is not going to be YA, it's adult. And then my next YA is not going to be The New Friends, but something else that I'm also not allowed to talk about yet, because but I think it's, to drop a couple hints, the football research that I'm doing is for that book. It is related to one of my other YA novels, but it is not a sequel or a prequel. I'll call it a companion book. And I think a lot of people are going to be very excited about it. I know I'm very excited about it. I didn't really like set out to write a companion book to this novel, but I got this idea that just like didn't let me go. And I just had to write it. And I told my editor, and we were both just so excited about it. So that will hopefully be out, if not next year, early in 2024.
Ooh, okay. Well, I'll definitely be keeping my eyes peeled. So I like to ask authors, because I mean, you spend so much time writing yourselves and ultimately, I guess, reading too, but what is your least favorite literary trope? Or is there one that's out and common that you just cannot stand?
So it needs to be done super, super well. And that is the character or narrator is dead the whole time. And I mean, not that that's like super widely used, but I mean, The Sixth Sense did it. We were all surprised when The Sixth Sense did it. It's a great movie, but I haven't really read a book that replicates that twist or executes it well at all. And it does kind of like crop up sometimes in thrillers. I read an adult, a mega best-selling adult thriller a couple years ago that uses that trope. And I was just like, first of all, like I could spot it from a mile away. And I'm like, really, we're doing like the I See Dead People bullshit in an adult thriller novel in the year 2017, our Lord. I just really did not think it was done well at all. So I am very inclined to roll my eyes when I encounter it in a book. Because I also think that's just like something that it relies on the visuals and not just an unreliable narrator. So I think it's done better in film anyway. There are just some tropes that are very successful in films that authors try to replicate. And it's like, nah, you tried.
Does not always land. Yeah. The last time I read a book that had that trope where it surprised me, it was a Goosebumps book. And I was in like fourth or fifth grade. And I was genuinely floored. I still talk about that book to this day. So my last question is, another question I like to ask authors, what advice do you have for aspiring writers, or something you wish you would have known when you started writing?
Oh, this is a good one. The thing that I keep coming back to lately is not necessarily a craft thing in particular. Like, I'm not one of those authors that's like, write every day, because I mean, I don't write every day, so I'm not going to tell somebody else to write every day. But I guess if I could give like advice to my past self, when I was trying to like break into publishing, was that to just like enjoy the pre-publishing period more, like before you get concerned with like trying to find an agent or get published, like just enjoy the act of creating and writing. Because once you start publishing, once that train has left the station, the industry and everything that goes along with it will do everything in its power to like take that joy away from you, like whether it's deadlines or whatnot. So I guess I would just tell people that are like aspiring writers that, because I mean most aspiring writers I want to know how to get published, and I want to just tell them all, like, just take your time to really write a book that you're super proud of. Like, don't just write what you think is going to get you a literary agent or get you published, because that stuff is also fleeting. You have to just enjoy what you're doing.
I really appreciate you taking the time to be here with me today. And just a reminder for all of our listeners that Weekend is now available everywhere in paperback. And if you really fancy a hardcover, the Barnes & Noble edition has a special deleted scene. So keep that in mind. If you haven't read it or any of Kara's other novels yet, you're missing out on some brilliant writing. So I highly suggest that you do. And Kara, if you want to tell people where they can find you on social media, and I'll be sure to link it as well.
Sure. So I am most active on Instagram at Kara Thomas Writes. I also have a website with a contact form, Kara-Thomas.com. I am sort of on Twitter at Kara T Writes, but Instagram is usually the best place to find me at the moment.
That's the same party line I give people for books. All like, we have a Twitter, hasn't updated since 2019. So
don't bother going there.
Or 2021, I mean. But yes, okay. So thank you so much for being here. I really appreciate it.
Thank you for having me.